Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Do you know how happy I am that we slept together?
Oh, I feel so damn sick and dirty. I can't stand it anymore.
Come on, girls. Let's go shopping.
I believe you were expecting me.
I'm not the one who's confused. You don't even know who you are.
Come out to your neighbors.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are celebrating the iconic cinematic legacy of John Waters. Waters is a queer cinema auteur and filmmaking icon responsible for cult classics like Pink Flamingos, Female Trouble, and Hairspray. Our guest this evening is John Waters himself, who joins us ahead of his one-man show at Hamer Hall this October. So we are speaking with Waters about his remarkable filmic career and his iconic landscape-changing filmography. So a whole hour, Conrad, dedicated to the father of filth. You are perhaps John Waters' number one fan, so I think you've been waiting for this episode.
I saying I'm his number one fan is probably a bit of a stretch, but yes, big fan. Was a real honour to be able to speak to him for this program. And I think, you know, for a lot of people, Ian said it, you know, great before, he is known as the, you know, the Pope of trash, the filth elder. He's known to be, you know, equal parts delightful and disgusting. And I think what, you know, he's a cult favorite, he's a cult figure, but underneath all of that as well, he's someone who's just really enjoys making art and putting himself out there into the world.
He rose to fame with Pink Flamingos in 1972, which followed a number of short films, I.e. Your Makeup, Mondo Trasho. Actually, I think that was in a short film, Hag in a Black Leather Jacket, number of short films.
The best name of a short film ever.
But he, of course, Female Trouble was what propelled him to cult auteur status, and he followed that with Female Trouble, another cult classic, now part of the queer canon. Of course, these were two films that introduced us to Divine, and Divine is really the face of John Waters' cinema. Divine, of course, was in Polyester in 1981, which also starred Tab Hunter, and this was something of the introduction of John Waters, as it were, to mainstream cinema. And then, of course, Something Wild, and after that, Hairspray. And Hairspray really is perhaps, I hope I'm not overstating the mark here, but his most famous film.
Absolutely.
He's certainly best known, and I would say his most mainstream film still to date. Of course, a few films after that, Serial Mum, Cry Baby with Johnny Depp, but it is those early films that really John Waters is best known for, and I think capture his sense of kind of risque whimsiness and transgressiveness better than any of his newer works.
I think a lot of people forget too that he's only had a small amount of films, like 14 actual features that he's done, but he's so well revered, I guess, and understood to be someone who has pushed the boundaries of cinema, that he has been allowed, I guess, to continue on in this field, because he's kind of chosen to branch out. He still loves film and he still loves cinema, and he's regularly you know, looked towards to talk about what's happening in mainstream cinema. He puts together a best of top 10 films of the year every year for multiple sites, and people will still look to him because of his knowledge and his love of all things kind of pop culture as well. And I mean, he writes books, he tours, he does art shows. He is, like I actually say in his interview, you know, to me, he's a modern day Renaissance man.
And he is, of course, coming to Melbourne this October. I think the date is the 18th of October at Hamer Hall, where he's bringing his one-man show to Melbourne. I think it's called Hysterical, Shameless and Revelatory. That's the name of the show. If you do want to find out more about that show, do head to the Art Centre Melbourne website, where you can catch all the details about his one-man show. But this is, you know, what an opportunity to see John Waters live in person. There is something about John Waters, in my mind, his kind of place in the cultural landscape kind of far exceeds these films that we're looking at. And the films are important. There's no doubt that they were landscape-changing. If you think about some of the stuff that we saw in particularly a film like Pink Flamingos, I mean, that was landscape-changing. But he does occupy a very important place in the queer canon and a important place in pop culture. I mean, that was tapped into even in that Simpsons episode where he had that kind of guest spot. And I think the episode was called Homer's Phobia. But dealt, of course, with the acceptance of gay people, really. That's what the episode was ultimately about. It was about breaking down those stereotypes. So there's no doubt that he's got this kind of cherished place in popular culture.
And because of his well-recognized understanding of pop culture and his excellent writing, like he's written quite a few books about a lot of different subjects, he is someone that people come to regularly for his opinion. And it's because he's such a great interviewer and he knows how to play the game. And I think that's one of the things I always have loved about him from a publicity point of view, especially back in the day when he was bringing out a new film. You would see him everywhere. He'd do every talk show, every, you know, kind of basic cable show. He'd do it because he just wanted to talk about his movies and talk about himself, really,
but of
which
course,
is wonderful.
Now that he's appearing on Outtakes, he's far more selective in his interviews.
But he's someone who loves to talk about whatever he feels like talking about. So for me, you know, he'd just come off watching Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And he was really up about it. And he said, surprisingly, I really liked it. I didn't think I was going to like it. And I thought, God, you know, you could do a whole show with him just talking about the movies that he's seen recently that he liked and he didn't like.
I'd love that show. Yeah. I'd so much rather watch that show than one of his actual films.
Well, that could be, I think that's some of the things that's happened too, is that he's evolved into someone who's a great guest.
Yes.
So, like, I think if someone doesn't snap him up to do a podcast soon, or just have him regularly feature on some type of audio kind of program like that, we're missing out, because he's got a story for everything. I literally had to kind of keep bringing him back because he just could keep talking about so many different things.
Well, we are, of course, going to listen to your interview with John Waters himself later in the program. We were thrilled to invite him onto the program and to have him accept that invitation. You know, how lucky are we to have him on Outtakes? We've had we have in our time had some auteurs of queer filmmaking.
We've had some amazing guests.
Luca Guadagnino, Barry Jenkins.
Oh, Barry.
Here I am calling him an auteur and then I can't even remember his
name.
He's
so good that we just...
The director of Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Oh, John Cameron.
John Cameron Mitchell.
Yes.
These are auteurs, you know, even if we can't remember their names. But John Waters, there's no doubt that he's up there. He's up there with the best, and what a thrill to have him on the program.
And I think everyone's got a favourite John Waters movie or moment or memory, and we'd love to hear yours. So please email us at onair@joy.org.au or SMS 0427JOY949 and tell us what you love about John Waters. I think, you know, you've named Hairspray as being one that, you know, that stands out. But I think for a lot of people, some of his earlier works have got some really precious moments in them. I just mentioned to you before, I watch Serial Mom at least once a year.
I love that you pronounce it in an American accent
You have to. And I regularly send clips from that movie to friends of mine that I find on YouTube, because there's just... I mean, it was, I could talk about that movie.
So is that your number one John Waters moment?
It is one of my favorite John Waters films. It's probably the one I go back to regularly, but, you know, I love Hairspray, I love Pink Flamingos. I've watched different films of his at different times and got a lot out of them.
So my favorite John Waters moment is not so much a moment as it is a quote.
Right.
When I was in New York, I stumbled into one of the largest bookshops there.
Oh, yeah.
And they had a series of T-shirts with John Waters quotes, and I bought one. And the T-shirt that I bought, which I'm very very careful about where I wear,
right.
Says, if you go home with someone and they don't have books, don't fuck them.
Yes.
And I love that quote.
He's very well known for that quote.
That is my favourite John Waters moment. Yeah. But we do want to hear your favourite John Waters moment. So if you have one, whether it's a film, whether it's a moment, message in, let us know. We want to hear from you. So the number is 0427JOY949, or you can email us at onair@joy.org.au.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, and this evening is all about John Waters. We are celebrating John Waters ahead of his one-man show at Hamer Hall this October. And Conrad, what better way to celebrate this queer auteur, this icon, this filmmaking icon, than to have him on the program?
Why not? I think the big thing that I was saying to a friend the other day, amazing to talk to him, you know, such a great interview and everything. I said it's really surprising for someone who hasn't made a film since 2004, you know, so we're talking 15 years ago, that he still has so much to talk about. And he's not just kind of resting on his film career. He's got so many other things going on and so much other great stuff happening that he makes for a great interview regardless of what you're talking about.
Well, he was on the screen as recently as 2015 when he had a starring turn as, quote, an aeroplane passenger in Alvin and the Chipmunks. So
the road trip.
I don't know how well his acting career is going.
He's getting a few acting roles. He's done a few weird little things. I think he's one of those people, too, that just does something for fun. You know, he's not actively out there, you know, competing for roles.
And if you look at the list of documentaries that he's appeared in, I mean, there's a lot of documentaries there.
His social commentary and his ability to tell a great story. I mean, he's doing his whole live show is really him up on stage reminiscing or just giving his opinion. So he's someone that makes a great guest for anything like that, including a great guest for us.
And as you were saying, so many books as well, starting in 1981 when he published Shock Value right through to this year, Mr. Know-It-All, The Tarnished Wisdom of a Filth Elder. And he does call himself a filth elder now, doesn't he?
Yeah, and he also he has all these other side events going on. He does a Christmas festival every year where he curates bands and has, like, you know, weird and wacky kind of performances on there. He brought out a Christmas album as well, which is something that he, because he's obsessed with really obscure pop music, particularly stuff from the 50s and 60s that's a bit camp and a bit weird.
And also Christmas is just so John Waters as well, the kind of camp trashiness of it all.
And I just finished reading his latest book, Mr. Know-It-All, and he just does such a great job of taking a very, I guess, you know, irreverent or something that's kind of a little bit silly and spins a tale about it. So it's either him kind of imagining what's going to happen or him reminiscing about something, and either way you're in for a bit of a treat.
So you were positively starstruck when you found out that you were going to be speaking with John Waters.
I was very happy. It was made my day, and I told quite a few people that I work with, and they're all a bit like, what are you going to say? What are you going to talk about? And I said, well, luckily I'm a professional. So I've got my list of questions already. And I did a little bit of research and just kind of, I didn't want, knowing that he's coming here to talk about his tour.
Yes.
To do his tour, I should say. I knew he probably wanted to touch a little bit on that, but there's so much I wanted to talk to him about. I wanted to talk to him about his filmography. I wanted to talk to him about his take on queer cinema, which was quite interesting. And I think it's something that a lot of people will we'll get, but a bit controversial, perhaps.
Okay. Well, we don't shy away from controversy.
No, here. And also I couldn't help but I had to touch on Divine as well. Just the fact that, you know, his films are inherently queer, and not just because Divine was a man in a dress.
No.
It's his whole... you know, pride in his sexuality that comes through in all of his art that he does, including his films. I just really wanted to kind of get some sense of what drives that, and what he actually says is quite surprising.
But also the general kind of ethos of his cinema is inherently queer. The whole transgressiveness of the cinema, if you put to one side the characters, if you put to one side the plot, the mere fact of the transgressiveness, the kind of rebellion against mainstream cinema that his cinema stands for, I mean, that is inherently queer. That is, I mean, that's real queerness. And then we have layers upon layers of queerness with characters like Divine, the actors, the storylines, the themes. It's just also queer.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people sometimes say, oh yeah, his stuff is quite camp. And for him, I think he thinks of himself as being much more punk rock. He wants to be disgusting and delightful. He wants you to have some type of reaction, but he also doesn't care if you don't like it.
Well, but that
which I kind of love that.
That whole tension between disgusting and delightful, I mean, that's very kitsch, isn't it? I mean, that's really what kitsch is about. And the proximity between camp and kitsch is sometimes quite blurry. So
he says too, you know, as he evolved as a filmmaker and as he got older, his he said one of the things he would tell himself if he could go back in time and say, get your characters to stop shouting so much in those early films, you know, because he said, I wanted people to be really shocked all the time. And he said, for me, I thought that meant yelling and lots of big gestures. And he said, you know, you live and you learn kind of thing. But I think what he's always trying to do is just to make you kind of either make you laugh or make you kind of just be awake.
Well, you did actually start with a question about... well, kind of his broader filmic career, but also why we haven't seen so much from him more recently.
So you've made 17 feature films across your career, but it's been 15 years since your last cinema release. You've never stopped working. You've got so many projects on the go. But what would it take to get you back in the director's chair? And would you consider doing something with Netflix or one of those other platforms?
Sure, I would. I would make movies with anybody that said yes. But since I've made my last movie, I have certainly participated in Hollywood. I've been paid development deals to write 4 different movies that never got made.
Right.
But they paid me, and so I worked, I wrote them, I did everything, and that's fair, that's the way Hollywood goes. But I've also been busier than I've ever been in my whole life, doing spoken word shows and books and touring and art shows. So if they told me I could make a movie today, I don't know when I'd have time to make it.
So on our program, Outtakes, each week, we take a deep look into queer cinema and how it relates to different genres and topics of the day. Your filmography is obviously broad, but it is also undoubtedly and very proudly queer. So what's your take on current queer cinema, and what was the last queer film you saw that you really loved?
I'm not sure what that means anymore, because all films seems like they have gay characters in it now. I don't know if there is a film that's only about gay people. I'm trying to think what I've seen. I mean, the last two movies I saw that I love were Quentin Tarantino's movies and Jim Jarmusch's movies, and I guess neither of them was really what you would call a queer movie. But, you know, my 10 best list that I put in Art Forum every year always has, I like to feel bad European art movies. They're my favorite.
Yeah.
But as far as, it doesn't, I always think that gay is not enough anymore. I mean, almost progress is admitting there can be such a thing as a bad gay movie. For a while, when they first came out, you could never say that. I think today, I don't know. I don't fetishize, you know. I always say, I don't want my books to be in just the gay section. I'm next to true crime back by the bathroom. I want them to be up front with the bestsellers and with the, who cares what sexuality is about somebody that was. So I'm not a separatist, but at the same time, if it shows a subject in a new and exciting way, no matter what the subject is, I'm for it. Or if it takes a subject that seems like maybe we've seen it a million times before, and do it in a completely different version. I mean, the last two, think of the big hit movies like Bohemian Rhapsody and Elton John, One the Rocket Man. They both are about a gay man, but they couldn't be, in a way, more commercial and mainstream. So that's what's changed so much.
You know, your collaborations with Divine really propelled drag culture into the mainstream and made him a huge star. He was a dear friend of yours who sadly passed away in 1988. And since then, drag has continued to become even more visible in popular culture. So what's your take on the current status of drag culture alongside the rise in transgender awareness and representation?
You say made him world famous, but I wish he had been alive to see, because after he died, his career got bigger and bigger, and if he hadn't have died, I think it would have gotten even bigger, because he was about to shoot Married with Children, which was a very mainstream hit TV comedy in America, and he was going to play the gay male uncle, not a drag queen, and I think that might have really launched his career in a different way, because Divine was not transgender in any way. He had no desire to be a woman. He didn't walk around dressed as a woman. He said he was a fat person. It's too hot to wear all that stuff, you know. The fake breasts and the wig, he'd be sweating, he'd rip them off. He did it for work. He was a good actor, and he didn't care if you called him a drag queen, but he didn't want to pass as a woman. I've said before, he wanted to be a monster. He wanted to be Godzilla. We thought him up to scare hippies. And Divine, I never thought it was camp. I thought Divine was punk, really, before there was such a word. But I give RuPaul great, great credit, because I think Divine in the beginning was a drag queen with edge, and drag queens didn't have them. Now they all have edge. There's no such thing as a Miss America drag queen much anymore. If there's a Miss America one, there's a horror spin on it. So I think Divine influenced drag culture, and then RuPaul, who's been the hardest working drag queen for years, turned it into mass popularity in America, which is a hard thing to do. And now, even if you come in sixth on Drag Race, you have a career. You can tour America in gay bars and perform for 2 years.
Do you think Divine would have gone on Drag Race?
Well, I think as if he was alive today, certainly he would have been a judge.
Yeah.
Because Divine wanted to be an actor. Divine's last role on the screen was as a man. He played a man in my movies, too. He wanted to, at the end of his career, he wore expensive men's suits. He also was in drag when he performed. But if Drag Race had been on then, there wouldn't have been Drag Race. It couldn't have been on when we started out, because it was illegal. It was too frightening. It was against the law. I mean, even being gay was illegal. So it would have been almost impossible for Drag Race to happen then. When we would go to drag balls, but they were usually illegal and bad neighborhoods with, like, gangsters and stuff. That's what they were like in the old days, drag balls. They were scary.
That sounds incredible. I want to go.
they were fun, but they were frightening.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9. And this evening, we are celebrating the iconic career of John Waters, who is a filmmaking icon and a queer auteur. He's responsible for films like Pink Flamingos and Hairspray. And that was part one, Conrad, of your chat with John Waters. What a thrill to have him on the program. And some of those things that he had to say about queer cinema I found particularly interesting.
Yeah, he's always good for an opinion. And I think what I loved too was, you can't talk to John Waters without talking about Divine. And we just played Divine, one of Divine's biggest hits, You Think You're a Man, but You're Only a Boy, in parentheses. And I think when you're kind of talking about Divine, they're so intrinsically linked, because not only did he appear in a lot of his films, but what they were obviously also very good friends. But the thing that everyone, you know, kind of ties them back together is that they both were really irreverent, but they were totally original. Like, there was nothing else like that. And when I asked him about, you know, the impact of Divine on drag culture, it has been referenced on RuPaul's Drag Race, and people do talk about his impact on drag now, and what that actually means. But I thought it was really interesting that, you know, John Waters was like, he just wanted to dress like that because he knew that it shocked people, and he wanted to be a monster, and, you know, he'd rip all that stuff off because he'd get hot, and it was very much about playing a character. And at the end of the day, he was still just a guy in a dress having fun.
But, you know, we did a whole program on queercore cinema, kind of punk rock cinema, as it were. And one of the key purposes of queercore cinema, and I think films like Pink Flamingos kind of do sit neatly within the kind of queercore framework, but one of the purposes was the shock value.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I think Divine and, to a large extent, John Waters have often been about shock value. But interestingly enough, Divine as well was coined by People magazine the quote drag queen of the century. So I don't know how RuPaul would feel about that.
Oh, you know, Ru's probably the drag queen of this century, so it doesn't matter. But I think the other thing with RuPaul, with Divine, was that aesthetically he did go all out. He kind of made himself always look pretty crazy and everything. But he was also a really big guy. And I think for that, at that time, there was quite a, you know, like, I mean, there was never really a different time. People are quite body conscious and about putting that aesthetic out there.
Yes.
But his aesthetic was big and bold and brash. And, you know, there's a lot of references to him being the original, as Divine, template for Ursula in The Little Mermaid.
Absolutely.
Which is...
Absolutely.
And when you hear people talking about they're going to make a remake of it and things like that, everyone's like, oh, you know, get Harvey Feinstein or...
But, and that's why people are lambasting Disney at the moment for Carl. Well, the rumor is Melissa McCarthy will be cast.
Interesting choice.
So people are a little bit disgruntled about that. But there's no doubt that Divine, you know, is the kind of figurehead of John Waters' cinema. Of course, playing the kind of lead role in Pink Flamingos, but following that up with films like Polyester, Hairspray, and a number of other Waters films. There's no doubt that Divine is, you know, one of the key components to a John Waters film.
And he's such a loyal director. Once you've been in one of his films, he'd just bring you back and he'd find roles for you to do. It's kind of like, who's Leonardo DiCaprio is always making movies with?
Martin Scorsese.
Martin Scorsese. So Divine's kind of like his...
Luca Guadagnino and Tilda Swinton.
There you go.
Every director has their muse.
Yeah, exactly.
But
John Waters had more than just Divine. So Ricky Lake was in 5 of his films. Mink Stole's been in all of them. Like, extremely loyal. And to people that you kind of go, it's not about them being perhaps the best actor.
No.
It's about them, him wanting them to be around, which I kind of like.
But
that.
Also, Divine was willing to go places.
Oh yeah, totally.
You know? And you know, I love that we looked at a short while ago. We did a program called Fat and Fabulous about body positive cinema.
Yep.
And we looked at Hairspray, because Hairspray actually was very body positive.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot that can be said about the influence of Divine in popular culture. But, you know, coming back to queer cinema, because I love that you asked John Waters about his take on queer cinema, and I think he responded by saying, I'm not a separatist, and I love that.
Yeah.
But he also, you know, he said, I'm not sure what that means.
Yes.
And I just love that. That idea that, you know, queer cinema can be so malleable and mean so many different things, and it's kind of hard to pin down. And then when he followed that with gay is not enough,
and then
this progress is admitting that there's a bad gay film, and I'm like, well, we're very progressive then, because we say that a lot of films aren't so great on this program.
And we know that he also is someone who loves cinema, he loves pop culture, so he's ingesting probably a lot more than, you know, your average person. So for him to be really like, kind of like, yeah, you know, queer culture, it's important, but he doesn't see his filmography, I think, as I guess these bastions of queer culture like a lot of people do.
Yes.
Because he thinks so many other things are just as important.
But also that's his like reference point, like that's this is his, you know, what we see in a John Waters film is the view that John Waters has of the world.
Which is
so for him, there's not all that much transgressive or progressive about this cinema. This is just the way he sees the world.
Yeah.
He doesn't see it as a kind of queer film. It's just this is the way the world looks to him.
There's a really great story because he's got that, you know, in my head I always think he's been there, done that, and nothing really surprises or shocks him anymore. And he's always has find something, and he talks about buying a piece of art from this kind of conceptual artist, and they literally just took a framed canvas and put it outside in a very dark and dank place, and over a period of 12 months it got covered in mold and covered in all this kind of, you know, outdoorsy stuff. Then the person brought it back inside and hung it up on the wall and was going to let it dry naturally, and they noticed that people in the room, when they'd come in to look at the picture, were starting to feel sick and ill from it, because the type of mold that was growing on there was poisonous. And so they actually figured that out, took it out, they lacquered it and covered it up, and he loved that. He was like, I just think that's so great that you could have a piece of art hanging on your wall that could potentially kill you, but because it's been lacquered and everything, it won't. But he never tells anyone that. So he brought it and he has it up on his wall and he's like, don't get too close, it could kill you. And you know, that's kind of John Waters.
But that's also,
he thinks it's hilarious.
That's John Waters cinema too.
It's perfect.
Kind of like this, yeah. Kind of,
don't get too close, it could kill you.
Correct, something like that. Well, you did sit down with, yes, John Waters and have a chat with John Waters. And we've heard part one of that chat. Touched on some great points. Obviously, his working relationship with Divine, his take on queer cinema. Why it is it's been so long since we saw a John Waters film? What can we expect from part two of your chat with John Waters?
So we touch on the fact that he does so much more nowadays than, you know, obviously make films. It's been 15 years since his last feature, but he's as busy as ever. So he touches on a few things that he's been doing alongside the writing. He does reflect back a really great story about Hairspray, just about kind of his encounters with people, about how many people still really love that film, but he sees it as something quite subversive and a lot more challenging than, I think, it's the music that kind of allows him to do that. And he also talks about the show that he's bringing, Make Trouble, which is coming to Melbourne in October.
Well, we are speaking with John Waters this evening on Outtakes as we celebrate his iconic filmic career.
So you're known fondly as the Pope of Trash, and you've recently described yourself as a filth elder, which I love. And it's fair to say you've been there and done that when it comes to experiencing all that life has to offer. But what was the last thing you've encountered that equal parts disgusted you and delighted you?
Well, that's a big difference, because everything about the political situation in America today disgusts me, but it doesn't delight me in any way. I mean, Trump even ruined camp. he's not so bad he's good, he's so bad he's bad. So,
yeah.
So basically, I think that whole thing is over. What delighted me, I'm trying to think. I think Quentin Tarantino's new movie delighted me and surprised me and pulled the rug out from under my feet. So I like filmmakers that give me something new, you know, something that I haven't. I always like feel bad movies. I feel good in real life. I don't expect a movie to make me feel good. The one kind of movie I hate is when the audience all goes, oh, that's always a moment that I want to levitate in lunacy because it makes me so crazy.
I could imagine. I can't imagine you at too many feel-good films. So you're a modern-day Renaissance man. You're doing it all. Is there still something in particular, though, that you'd like to achieve from an artistic perspective?
Oh, my God. My dreams came 2 years ago, and I know that makes you puke. It would make me puke if I heard somebody say that, too. But this is all gravy. You know, I've been getting away with this for 50 years, and I think anybody in the public who has let me do that by sticking by me all these years, and I haven't changed much, and I don't think my fan base has either, even though they've gotten, well, they're all ages. A lot of people now come to see me. They weren't even born when I made my last film. I used to say my first one.
Yeah, you're bringing your new show, Make Trouble, to Australia in October, and I've read it's part stand-up and part social commentary, but what else can people expect?
Expect really advice about how to make trouble. Your duty is to make trouble in a good way, and instead of being an outsider, how to sneak in and be an insider and screw things up from the inside and get a much wider audience. So in a way, I think I am self-help. I think proving that you can be crazy and triumph. It's a different time today. People are open to way more ideas than they used to be. Even you know, I said even in Hairspray, even racists liked Hairspray, which was really strange because it was a sneak attack on really racial relations that they didn't even realize that it was a musical that's now being performed in schools all over America that really celebrated gay marriage and interracial dating and teenagers and things that I'm not so sure most of the audience would admit to being for in real life.
With the new show, when you're in Australia, will you have any specific observations about Australia? Do you do that? Do you look at what's happening?
I do some, yes, but I don't live there, so certainly I can only do it on the political situation, also the movies that I see that come out there and the history of censorship and how it's changed. But certainly that's why I love to come there. I get to meet my audience. I get to see people all over the world that are some ways the same. They're getting closer because of the internet and the world culture that makes the world so small. But at the same time, it's a mixed bag because local color is vanishing in a way, but nobody has to leave where they were born anyway. They stay and make it better where they are because you don't have to move to go to a bigger city anymore to be involved. I know many people that their jobs, they don't even have to go to work anymore. They do it at home because it's all on a computer or somewhere. So the world is an international stage now, much more than it ever was. But if you don't travel, and I think the only way to ever cure racism is to travel. I mean, you can't be a racist if you travel all over the world. And I know that's not a very, very, you know, realistic way to sentence racists to world travel. But you can't be a racist if you travel the world all the time because you see how many different people and how everybody lives differently and everything. The only way you can be a racist is if you never leave your own neighborhood.
It's been so amazing to talk to you. I'm a big fan, and I can't wait to come and see your show when you're here in October.
Good. Yell out to me in the audience.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll remember me. Thanks, John.
Bye-bye.
So, Conrad, that was your chat with John Waters. Are you going to yell out at him from the audience as he suggests?
Why not? I mean,
I think you will.
I gushed so much during that interview. He'll go, oh, yeah, I remember that guy. He couldn't stop giggling.
I did not expect for you to explore issues of racism with John Waters.
He took it there. I really loved that. And he did mention, he said, you know, people love Hairspray. It's their touchstone for him. And that and The Simpsons. But with Hairspray, he said, you know, I just think it's so funny. A movie I made about racism, gay marriage, all of these quite, you know, kind of full on topics because he dressed them up with some, you know, fun music, some fun costumes and set it in the 60s. People just kind of love it. And it's one of the things that makes him, he said it always makes him laugh that the racists love that movie.
Five Dew Tones there with Shake a Tail Feather. We were, of course, talking about Hairspray. You did mention how great the music in that film was, so I thought, why not play one of the great tracks from John Waters' 1988 film, Hairspray. We are, of course, celebrating John Waters this evening on Outtakes ahead of his one-man show at Hamer Hall this October. The show is Make Trouble, and if you want to find out more about that show, do head to artcentremelbourne.com.au. Great chance to see the man behind so many important films, films like Pink Flamingo, films like Female Trouble, live in person here in Melbourne.
I saw his last live show that he did, probably be about 10 years ago now, and it was wonderful. And, you know, it's that whole thing, if someone can hold your attention for 75 minutes, he's not really a stand-up comic, but he makes you laugh. He's got all of the elements, he's got all the great stories and the great storytelling ability as well, and he knows the show. I think one of the things that really surprised me in his book recently, he was saying that the show delivery never changes, that he knows exactly where he needs to place everything. It just depends on the reaction of the crowd. And so he said he can kind of time it down to, he knows when he'll be back in his hotel room, like as he does the show. And for some people it's like, oh, he's just doing it, you know, off the top of his head. But he said each night he does tweak it a little, but he never goes over. He knows exactly what he wants to say.
So tell me, do you think that there is an extent to which John Waters has tamed? He's now, you know, is coming up to mid-70s. He was, I don't know, 45 years younger when he brought us Pink Flamingos. That was 1972.
I think he's of his time in lots of ways. You know, like, he hasn't really embraced social media.
Well, he's not on social media.
Yeah, you can kind of find a few bits and pieces of him doing things out there. But he loves, you know, his telling stories. He's old school, I guess, in that way of, he likes to share himself in kind of ways that are a lot more tangible.
Speaking of Cher, he's actually the same age as Cher.
Oh, is he? They should have a joint birthday party together.
Can you imagine? Now, that's a party I'd want to go to.
That would be insane. But I feel like I think he is probably someone that realizes now, like, what he can and can't do. And he enjoys his life. Like, when I said to him, is there anything that, you know, you just really want to do? He's like, you know, this is going to sound corny and terrible, and if someone said it to me, I'd throw up. But he was like, all of my dreams have come true. Like,
that's very sweet.
Yeah, and he said, that makes me sick, which I love. But he did say, you know, I've done everything I want, so everything else now that I do is just fun.
Yes.
So he's, you know, he's in that great position. He's financially stable, but he's not overly wealthy.
Yes.
He can go around and still have some anonymity, I guess. But he can enjoy he can turn the spotlight on himself if he wants to.
Well, he does that quite often.
Yeah, really. It's kind of, I think it's he's in a win-win situation. And people like him for better or worse, you know, and even the people who probably think that they, you know, probably hate all the things, they'd be really charmed by him.
But, you know, funnily enough, it was how much people, a lot of people hated films like Pink Flamingo that skyrocketed him to the icon of kind of cult auteur. Because even, you know, if you take a listen to the trailer of Pink Flamingos, and I've got an extract here, but if you take a listen to that trailer, interestingly enough, you didn't actually see any of the film in the trailer. There were no clips from the film in the trailer. All the trailer was people saying either how much they loved or how much they hated this film.
Brilliant.
And they capitalized on that. They monetized this kind of
anger and outrage
towards the and said, well, here is something uniquely transgressive. Go see it. And you know what? People did.
Thing for people.
Oh, it's marvelous.
Absolutely.
Most disgusting thing I've ever seen in my whole life.
Not to be believed.
Absolutely outrageous.
It was divine. Fabulous.
I think it's the future of city living.
Fantastic. It was really fun. Excellent.
Yes.
Loved it. Really good.
Really good.
Right? It's great. Piece of garbage.
I love religious movies.
A little gross, but I liked it.
Well, it was really the grossest film I'd seen.
I think John Waters has got his finger on the pulse of America. I think he's got his thumb securely up America's ass.
I enjoy dirty things as much as everyone else does, but this isn't even dirty. It's just disgusting.
And you see that that's
oh my god, I love that so much.
But can you believe that that's actually the trailer?
Yeah.
That is the trailer of the film that was used in 1972 to promote this film, the original trailer to Pink Flamingos, which of course became a cult classic.
It's so, like, it's perfect, though, you know. And you can hear some of the different people reacting to it. You know, to hear, I think, an obviously gay man go, it's divine. Like, it's just, it's too perfect.
It's the first in what Waters himself called the Trash Trilogy, which also include Female Trouble, which he came in 1974, and Desperate Living in 1977. The film starred, of course, Divine, who was kind of coined the filthiest person alive. and it was filmed, funnily enough, in Baltimore, which is where Waters grew up and where Hairspray is set as well. So
most of his films are set in Baltimore. He still lives in there. He's a big Baltimore fan. He recently called Donald Trump out for trashing Baltimore, and he says quite a few things about Trump when he gets a chance. He's not a fan. He's a very funny man. One of the things I have to say too is, you know, he's always been really great at bringing out crazy performances. He's a big fan of Patty Hearst, who was, you know, famously a very wealthy heiress who was abducted and kept as a prisoner by this the one of these terrorist groups back in the 70s. They had such a great working relationship, and she gets to kind of, I guess, play off some of those kind of weird things. Her life is just so crazy anyway, so why not be in John Waters movies and be crazy? Yeah. And she is also in one of my favorite John Waters films, which I mentioned before, which is A Star Turn for Kathleen Turner. Back then, everyone was so shocked when Kathleen Turner agreed to do the film, but it is just perfection. It is so crazy and psychotic, and like I said, you know, if you're one of my friends, you will unfortunately get some of the scenes text to you regularly, because it's my go-to for always making me laugh.
Well, funnily enough, not everyone was laughing. I mean, to be expected. Pink Flamingos, you know, if we come back to Pink Flamingos, this was the tagline of the film was, quote, an exercise in poor taste. and the film included a number of scenes that centered on voyeurism, sodomy, masturbation, vomiting, rape, incest, murder, cannibalism, castration, foot fetishism. I mean, they really did go there. And what I love about that was, for as profane as it was and as transgressive as it was, the film was made on a $10,000 budget. $10,000. Imagine making a film for $10,000 today, but it grossed $7 million. And $7 million is, you know, spare change at the box office these days. But how's that for a return on investment?
And it's still making them money. And I think that's the thing, you know, like he was very shrewd with all of that sort of stuff. And I think, you know, for better or worse, you've got to appreciate the fact that he has had such longevity, that he's left his mark. People still talk about him to this day. And he's, you know, he's made some really fun and interesting films, and they're great queer films as well. And I think, you know, for a program like ours to be able to dedicate, to speak to him and dedicate a program to him is only fitting.
Important.
So, yeah.
It's, and his work is, as you say, it's important work. So very important that we spotlight it as part of our cinematic legacy, as part of our cinematic history.
Absolutely.
So look, what a thrill to spotlight John Waters on the program. Thank you to the team behind his show Make Trouble for giving us the opportunity to speak with him.
Thank you.
If you do want to find out more about Make Trouble, do head to artcentremelbourne.com.au, where you can purchase tickets to John Waters' one-man show that takes place in October.
And I challenge everyone this weekend to go out and, you know, watch an old John Waters movie, or read one of his books, or maybe, you know, listen to his Christmas CD. Get you in the spirit. It's only a few months away.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.